Hello, Internet. My name's Jonathan Cook.
And I'm Matt Noble.
And on this week's episode of the Screen Verdict podcast, we're doing a Netflix showdown. We're pitting him in a ring and we're going to see who comes out on top. Matt, who are we going to be talking about?
We are going to be talking about some movies on Netflix. Yes, Netflix, infamous for making TV shows like House of Cards and Stranger Things and The Crown. Well, they've started making movies with some pretty heavy hitters in the movie world. And those movies are starting to do pretty well at Oscars with nominations. And even last year with wins, they had a Roma, which was upset in the Best Picture category, but still took out like quite a few Oscars, including Best Director. So Netflix, they're really taking over our lives at home, the Emmys, and now the Oscars.
Yeah, they've struck big at the Emmys, now seeing if they can do it at the Oscars. And they had three films in particular do well at the nominations this year. They are The Irishman, Marriage Story, and Two Popes. Matt, which of these have you seen?
I've seen The Irishman and Marriage Story. What have you seen?
I have seen The Irishman and Two Popes.
Okay, so we can both talk about The Irishman and give a bit of a review and a score. And then I guess the other two, I can talk a bit about Marriage Story, you can talk about Two Popes, and we can see whether we think the other person should watch that movie. Does that sound good?
So we're going to recommend whether you should watch The Irishman. Matt's going to recommend to me whether I should watch Marriage Story. And I'm going to let Matt know whether he should watch Two Popes.
And the listeners are more than welcome to take on those recommendations as well.
Yes. And if you've already seen them, let us know your thoughts. Facebook.com/Screen Verdict Podcast. Weigh in on the Netflix Battle Royale.
Yeah. I'm excited. You know what's interesting with the awards and Netflix and stuff? They've done very well at the Emmys, but they've never won a Best Series award. They've never, like, got that, like, there. And it's funny, they were, like, the first, you know, House of Cards, and that got nominated for the first season. It was all the rage and stuff. But since then, it's not that the Emmys won't give it to Best Streaming Services, a Best Comedy or Drama Series, because Handmaid's Tale won for Hulu and Marvel's Mrs. Maisel and Fleabag won for Amazon. So, maybe Best Picture win for Netflix. Can they win? And then last year they were meant to win for Roma, Best Picture, and they lost that. So they're not good in that very top category. They're good all over the place, but it's that Best Picture or Best Drama or Comedy Series that's eluded them.
Should have won for Stranger Things. But moving on.
Oh, yeah.
The Irishman. Martin Scorsese, epic director, coming out with an epic film. It's 3.5 hours long. Stacked cast. What more do you need, Matt? De Niro, Pacino, Pesci.
Yeah.
How excited were you for this film?
What, sorry?
How excited were you for this film?
Honestly, was not super excited. So like, oh, I heard it was quite long. Some gangster movie. I've seen a few of them in my day. All the regulars. Yeah, I don't know. I was like, I thought, oh, it'll probably be good, but I wasn't particularly super pumped for it.
That was such a long pause after you said honestly that I thought, oh, he's obviously wasn't excited for it. But then the pause lasted even longer, and I thought, oh, maybe it's the double bluff. He was super excited for it. Nah, not that excited for it.
I sort of thought in my honestly, I put in the inflection of, like, a question,
yeah,
and I was waiting for you to go, yeah, honestly.
No, I want you to lie to the Screen Verdict audience.
And then I realized that you weren't going to say that, so that I better just say what my honest opinion is.
I was maybe in a similar position to you. I like Scorsese's films. In particular, Taxi Driver. Taxi Driver is one of my favorite films. But a lot of his other classics I enjoyed, but maybe felt were slightly overrated. Like The Goodfellas was good. Raging Bull was good. But for me, he's just not, like, that guy. Like, for some people, he's the director of a generation. And so I thought, another gangster movie. What does he have to say in a gangster movie that he hasn't said already?
Yeah, like, can I be honest? Like, I find Scorsese, like, I tend to like him more in interviews than necessarily his movies. Like,
I guess you don't like Marvel then. Oh, loved what Scorsese had to say about Marvel. It's not cinema. I've been saying it for years.
Yeah, well, I thought maybe he was being, I thought at first I thought maybe he's being so harsh on Marvel movies because The Irishman is his own superhero movie. The
That's the trying twist.
To get attention. Yeah, but no, he's with DC. He's doing The Irishman, the new DC film. But no. And not the Marvel stuff. I think he's been a bit of a, like, why bother? Like, anyway, it's more, he's so passionate about movie making and he gets so excited. He's got this real, like, energy to him that is really engaging. You go, oh, this is the kind of guy you want making movies, someone who loves movies and loves storytelling, gets really excited talking about movies. Tarantino is sort of the same. He's always so, like, got this energy and he's just, like, infectious. And you're like, oh, watching this interview with Martin Scorsese makes me more excited for movies and cinema. And then his movies I like, but they're not my, like, favorite movies.
Yeah, I was a little mixed, but I thought, okay, I'll get on board. I'll queue up the Netflix. See, that's the good thing. I mean, look, I like watching films in the cinema. There's definitely a benefit to seeing them in the cinema, especially certain visuals. But when it's a 3.5-hour movie, I like being able to watch it at home. I can pause if I need to, go to the bathroom, get something to eat or drink. I mean, you're going to start to get dehydrated over the course of 3.5 hours. So yeah. I did like the fact that I had the option to watch this at home on Netflix. And something that you'll notice fairly on is that the film jumps in time periods. And so just to let you know, we're not going to do spoilers. We're going to try and keep this relatively spoiler-free. Film's still fairly recent. People might want to watch it before the Oscars comes out. So
it's on Netflix, so people are watching it at different times. It's not like everyone's watching it the same week.
Yes. So this is not a spoiler, but you find out that the film kind of jumps around time periods. We see Robert De Niro's characters, different stages and ages of his life. A lot of people had a lot to say about this. Matt, did you buy De Niro at these different ages? Were you pulled in or did you find it not believable?
Yeah, like, it was fine. I bought it. I believed it. I was going, oh, he looks really weird with this de-aging technology and stuff like that. But, like, I did think it's a bit weird. So they got a movie where for most of it, it's a young guy and they got an old guy to play him. Like, almost like...
The ratios were off. The ratios were off. You think if you're going to hire an old guy, a better percentage of the film should be as an old guy.
Yes. Yeah, I thought, why not get a younger, there's good younger actors too, and then you just make him look older.
Yeah.
Seems like they were trying to force De Niro into the role. Like, it looks like this has to be De Niro, even though he's like 40 years too old to play this guy.
It's like you hire someone 75 years old to play Captain America just for that one scene at the end of the Avengers. But the rest of the time you got to use your de-aging technology for like 98% of the movie.
Yeah. Anyway, it was fine. It looked fine, but I didn't think it's a bit weird.
Yeah, I agree. I bought the de-aging technology. I thought it looked better than other people did. The one time where you noticed it where is he goes, I think someone did something to his daughter and he goes to beat him up and he's like kicking him and stomping him and it looked very fake. I thought for a movie of this caliber and this budget, this looks rather awful. Robert De Niro, his face might look young, but he's physically not as sprightly. I don't think he's kicking the crap out of people as well as he did back in the Raging Bull, Taxi Driver days.
Yeah, the aging looked great when halfway through he had to take a puffer of Ventolin.
Yeah, ask for a Weathers original.
Yeah. Yeah. People were aged in the movie, or de-aged, because I guess they were made to look younger, not older. Yeah, there's a very, very lot of clinics in Los Angeles have done a lot of good business out of this over the years. And I wonder if they're in threat now of this technology. People.
Yeah, I don't need surgery. I just got a Snapchat filter.
Yeah.
Save myself a couple grand.
Give me the De Niro. Yeah. The De Niro filter.
So as, on top of De Niro, as I mentioned, stat cast, Al Pacino. What did you think of Al Pacino's character? His name will come to me, but the union boss.
Was it Hoffa or Hopper?
Yeah, Jimmy Hoffa, I think it was.
Oh, yeah, Hopper's the guy
Stranger Things
from the Muppet movie, right? Oh, no, oh, yeah, the Stranger Things detective, and also is he the guy in the Muppet movie who has the fried frog legs change? Doc Hopper?
You're the Muppets expert. I'll believe you if you say so.
That's right, yeah. Hoffa, a bit of a character. We like Al Pacino. He's a good actor, and he was given a pretty. This guy was a bit of a personality, running a union, and very sort of had a lot of flair and excitement and stuff.
Yeah, I thought this was kind of a fun character. It sort of felt like Al Pacino doing Al Pacino, short of saying hooah. But other than that, I liked him. We got some good scenes between the two. He was very energetic, De Niro, rather stoic. It was interesting, De Niro kind of, I don't know, did for a film about the Irishman, obviously it is about him. He is the Irishman, he's the main character, but I feel like he didn't make a lot of decisions. Do you feel like he was very passive in the film? He kind of just did what he was told to do by Pesci and Pacino.
Yes, I agree. I did not connect in with this character very much, to be honest.
And I kind of get that's part of his character. Like he's, you know, he was in the military. He's a man that follows orders. Now, you know, within the mob and the union, he's kind of just a man who takes directions. And I get that that's perhaps, you know, totally valid character trait to have. But there's not a lot of development then. If you just kind of do as you're told. In a piece called The Irishman that's 3.5 hours long, you might expect more character development, but it's hard to really develop when you're not the one making, you know, you're not taking ownership. You're not even the one making the decisions.
Yeah. I think there's one scene where, like, Albert, and I saw this a couple of weeks ago, I can't really remember much of it, but, it's hard to recount specific scenes, but in that one scene where Al Pacino just goes off at a whole room and people's like, you guys are jokers, you guys are losers or something. And then like De Niro then has a word and goes, okay, I'm out. He goes, I wasn't talking about you, just about everyone else in the room.
That was a good scene. He does make some decisions, I guess. I guess just maybe didn't get as much development as I expected from a 3.5-hour film. But someone that I did like was Joe Pesci.
Yeah, Pesci.
To be honest, I kind of feel like De Niro and Pacino just showed up and they were like, I just have to be De Niro and Pacino, and that's good enough. But Pesci, although Pesci is a good and popular actor, I didn't feel like Pesci just turned up and was like, well, I just have to be Pesci. He was like, I'm acting with De Niro and Pacino. I have to bring my A-game. And I felt like he was the actor that put in the most effort. He was the one that captivated and drew me in the most. I actually wanted to see more from this character.
Yeah. Now, a lot of people go on about how great an actor Robert De Niro is, how great an actor Al Pacino is, right? Like, everyone's like, these are two of the great actors of, you know, the past 30 years, 40 years or whatever. Joe Pesci, though, arguably, particularly for our generation, is probably the most iconic of the three from his performance as one of the wet bandits in Home Alone.
A classic.
Yeah, like, if you ask me what performance had a bigger impact on me growing up, Joe Pesci in Home Alone or the entire Robert De Niro, Al Pacino catalog, I'd probably, you know, as a, you know, 12-year-old kid say, oh, yeah, the Home Alone guy.
Yeah, I think even in retrospect, you'd probably take Home Alone over half of Scorsese's filmography.
Yeah, I reference the wet bandit, like, sort of the Home Alone, like, scenes probably more than other movies. You know, to be fair, there are some quite iconic. You Talking to Me is a De Niro thing that I probably do reference. So that probably is still, yeah. So You Talking to Me, burglars getting falling over, tripping over hazards. Both
filthy like animal.
What, sorry?
Yes, I said you filthy animal.
Oh, you filthy animal. Yeah, was that Joe Pesci says that, doesn't he?
He gets it for. Oh, it's the recording from the.
Oh, it's the movie. Yeah, no, you're right. It's in the dictaphone or the audio cassette tape. Yeah.
But anyway, Home Alone, very quotable. fan favorite. Yeah. Yes. Liked Pesci. Pesci was my favorite of the three, so...
He was very endearing. How sad did you feel when Robert De Niro's, like, kids thought he was some creepy old guy and they loved Al Pacino?
Yeah.
For people who haven't seen the movie, it's not really a spoiler. Robert De Niro's character, the Irishman, has some kids in the film, and like his best mate is Joe Pesci, and they like hang out a lot, but like his daughter never wants to talk with Joe Pesci. She's like, oh, this dude's bad news. This dude's a bit creepy, El Creepo. And he's really sad because he can't have kids. But then Al Pacino comes along. They love the guy, but he's just as dodgy.
Yeah, they don't want jokes, they want ice cream. That was the key. That was what Pesci didn't realize. These kids don't want to go bowling. They just want ice cream.
Yeah, what would you pick as a kid, bowling or ice cream?
Oh, I'd be a bit annoyed that you made me choose between the two. Surely they have ice cream at the bowling alley.
Good parents are getting both of these things for their kids.
I think if I had to pick bowling, because as much as I like ice cream, how long does a bowl of ice cream last? 5 minutes, if you pace yourself? I'm a kid. It's gone in 30 seconds. But bowling, don't know how many games I'm getting, but at least one game's going to go for, what, 30 minutes?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with bowling too. I think the time factor is huge. And I also think, I don't know, this must be speaking more about my childhood, like, there's ice cream in the freezer at home. You'll get some ice cream.
That's true. You can get ice cream anywhere. You can only bowl at the bowling alley.
Yeah. And usually when you're bowling, you've gone with friends. It's some sort of play date scenario. So it's always good. Get to hang out with the mates.
So we're Team Pesci, Team Bowling. Was there any sort of spoiler-free aspects of the film that you wanted to talk about, or should we give a mini verdict?
I am 98% confident is not a spoiler, and I think it could save people some disappointment by flagging it.
Okay.
Robert De Niro does not play someone who is Irish.
Yeah, he does.
Oh, is he actually? I thought he was Italian.
No. He's with the Irish mob, but he's originally Irish.
You mean he's with the Italian mob, but he's originally Irish?
Yes.
Oh, his nickname makes a lot more sense now.
You're like, wow, this was some kind of in-joke that they didn't explain over 3.5 hours.
Well, I assume they had, but I'd sort of, like, lost attention for a few minutes when they were explaining the origin of the nickname.
In your defense, it was easy to go in and out.
Yeah. Like, to be fair, like, De Niro is an Italian name, right?
Yes.
I know he's not I know his name isn't De Niro in the movie, but they did cast a guy with Italian heritage to play an Irish mobster that works with the Italian mob.
Yeah, it didn't really end up being that important, but he was Irish, but that's why he was kind of like an outsider, but Pesci takes a liking to him and brings him in, and that's how he ends up with the Italian mob, even though he's not Italian.
Yeah. I think it would have been better if they called it The House Painter.
Mm. Yeah, that's the that was the book that it was based on, right?
Oh. Maybe. I don't know. I didn't know it was based on a book.
Yeah, it was based on a book based on a real guy, and
yeah,
I think the name of the book was The House Painter.
Oh.
That's okay, funny if you just came up with that name and didn't know that that was the name of the book. Oh, you were close. You were close. The name of the book was I Heard You Paint Houses.
Which actually I think is a bit better than The House Painter. Like,
You were sticking with the. The Irishman, yeah. The House Painter.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think, or it could just be I Paint Houses.
Yeah.
Like, it could be the name. If I Heard You Paint Houses is a bit too long. Because I feel like that was a bit more of a thing with his character. So it's the very beginning of the film. He's like, I paint houses. Oh, that's not a good accent. But anyway, I paint houses. And then you see, like, someone die or get whacked off and sorry.
That's staying in.
See, don't get killed, and their blood splatters the wall of the house.
Yeah.
So I think it's not about like sort of interior design or exterior design.
Yes, that played a much greater role in the plot than him being Irish, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yes. So I'm now trying to read this guy's Wikipedia page just to see if there's anything else I missed. Anyway. Oh, here's interesting. He was the son of a house painter. Was that covered in the movie?
Not that I remember, but, you know, that's a lot of stuff to remember.
So his dad actually literally, and I'm assuming on the Wikipedia page when it says his dad was a house painter, like it's not in inverted commas or anything.
Yeah.
It just says.
It runs in the family.
I clicked on the house painter link. It says a house painter and decorator is a tradesman responsible for the painting and decorating of buildings and is also known as a decorator or house painter. The purpose of painting is to improve the appearance of a building and protect it from damage by water corrosion. Yeah, so his dad was a literal house painter.
I don't recall, but I don't think there are any flashbacks with the dad. Like, there were enough timelines already without going back to his childhood.
See some little baby that, like, you know, Robert De Niro's been de-aged. Like,
yeah, like they did hire a baby, but then the casting agent had to be like, actually, sorry, you know what? We're going to go with just an even more de-aged De Niro.
Yeah. Oh, man. Okay, so are we ready for our score? Is there anything else you want to cover?
No, I think I can just include it all in a little verdict, a mini screen verdict. The Irishman. There were some good moments, some good scenes, some good acting, some picturesque shots, and I enjoyed the soundtrack. I thought it was a great soundtrack. But ultimately, I thought the film didn't need to be this long. I thought it bounced around timelines too much. And I thought there just isn't anything that I'm getting from this that I haven't seen in a gangster film before. And to be honest, I kind of feel like Scorsese spent his entire life trying to make a gangster movie better than The Godfather, and he just never did. And that's sad. Although, to be expected, it's one of my favorite films, possibly the greatest film of all time. So, although you didn't clear that bar, you set a pretty high bar for yourself. So, in conclusion, it was just about worth watching if you have the time. I'm going to give it a 6 out of 10.
Okay, cool. You know, I'll tell you this at the end of the review. I went to a preview screening of Jojo Rabbit, right?
Nice.
And this sounds a bit off topic, but it was at the Cremorne Orpheum, near where your friend Borna used to live. And it was introduced the movie by Margaret and David, who are sort of the Australian Roger and Ebert, like our most famous movie reviewers. They used to have the TV show at the movies. They're always quite engaging. And they were talking about their favorite films of the year. And the film they disagreed on the most was The Irishman.
Oh.
So I'll tell you what they thought at the end of my review and see if you can guess who was the one who loved it and who was the one who was not a fan.
Should I guess now?
Yeah, you guess now if you want.
I'll go David liked it, Margaret didn't.
Yeah, okay, interesting, interesting. Well, I'll tell you what I thought first. And it was long. It was sort of like not that interesting. There was some nice performances in there. I think I agree with you, Joe Pesci MVP. I think the soundtrack was good, but I got a bit sick of this like guitar riff or like a little bit of music. I don't know. I'm not good with people probably sitting there going, that was a piano, not a guitar, you idiot. Like whatever. This little thing that opened each scene I found a bit annoying. I got a bit sick of that. Probably just because it was so long. It went like they did it a million times. I think why wasn't this a mini series? Wouldn't this have been better as a mini series?
Yeah, I mean, you've got 7 30-minute episodes.
Yeah. I don't know. I think this would have been a better mini series. I wasn't particularly engaged in the story. There are a few good scenes. 6 out of 10. There you go.
Margaret and David, Australia's second most popular film reviewers. In disagreement, but Screen Verdict, Australia's favorite TV and film reviewers, 6 even across the board.
Yeah. So one of them said it was one of their top 10 films of the year. They loved it. It was so, you know, great gangster film, yada, yada, yada. The other one's like, I'll tell you. Then Margaret was like, it was indulgent, David. It was indulgent.
I think I generally agree with Margaret more. I haven't watched any of their recent reviews, but I remember back in Australia, I was a fan of the show, and I feel like I tended to side with Margaret more. So that doesn't surprise me.
She was definitely the cooler. I didn't always – like I think sometimes I'd agree with David, sometimes I'd agree with Margaret, but she was definitely the cool. She's the one you want it to be. She's like, it's indulgent. What's the deal with these, you know, male filmmakers getting worse with – or something like that. She may have not said male, I don't know, but she was like, these filmmakers aren't getting as – like they're making not as good stuff. They're losing their authenticity, David. Then he'd be like, "Oh, well, I thought it was quite good." Like,
look, to sort of piggyback off that, I don't think we should be forcing diversity into stories that are like, you know, true stories or whatever, just for the sake of diversity. I think diversity is good, but I think people don't like it when they feel like it's forced or we're being pandered to. But having said that, to make a 3.5-hour film where you don't have a single significant character that isn't a white male, you know, some people are going to be like, come on, give me something, give me some character that I can see myself in. But if you weren't a straight white male, then nah.
And there were, like, particularly women that were a part of that story that they could emphasize more on. It's not like, yeah. You know, Ah, well, this is a 3.5 movie about a... Well, this obviously would be a more diverse film, but, like, it's in some environment where you're like, well, it's just that historically was the case. Like...
His daughter could have been more prominent or something.
Yeah. I agree. And look, I do think that, to be honest with Martin Scorsese, I think, like, he's got some, you know, really good films like Taxi Driver and stuff from early in his career. And then I feel like from about 2001, he, like, made movies that seem more designed to win Oscars. Yeah. Than just be like, and I'm not saying that The Irishman, I imagine watching it, I can't imagine that wasn't a passion project for him and something that he's incredibly personal, but it does feel a bit more Oscar-y and like sort of, you know, like, you know, it's like The Aviator, Gangs of New York, they all seem these big, sprawling, like epics that are meant to impress you with their, you know, stuff. The film I like he's done in the past 15 years is The Departed, which never had any intention on winning awards. Like, Warner Brothers were not prepared for a campaign for that movie, and it led to them being confused about what category to put. They had no plan for what to do with Matt Damon and Leonardo DiCaprio. It was just Martin Scorsese making a movie with a good cast, good story, some remake of a Korean film or something. And it just worked. It was just a fun film. And I wasn't, like, watching and thinking, oh, this is an Oscar thing. This is, like, you're just like, this is fun. That's the one that won Best Picture at the Oscars.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, Scorsese clearly genuinely loves cinema. He watches The Searchers every single year. So I think he makes films out of passion for making films. But I think, I guess when you get to that level, you've made the money, you've got the acclaim. I think the Oscars is kind of really the last thing left to cement your legacy. And I don't know to what extent it's influencing him, but I agree that some of these films do feel like they have been made with at least in part the Oscars in mind.
Yes. Yeah, no, I agree. And I think it's ironic and good that, like, the film where that was the least in his mind in the past decade was the one he won Best Picture Director for.
So we'll see. We'll see how it does at the Oscars. Matt and I both gave it a 6, so we're not exactly rooting for it. But we'll move on.
Maybe we thought all the other films were a 5.
Yes. So it's possible that we liked all the other films less. We'll get to one of those films now, Marriage Story. Matt, give me the pitch or the warning to whether or not I should watch Marriage Story.
What do you know about Marriage Story?
I know it stars Adam Driver and Scarlett Johansson and Laura Dern.
And it does.
They are married. I presume it gets rocky. It's perhaps about whether they stay together or whether they get back together. I know it was made by Noah Baumbach, who I've only seen one of his films, While We're Young, which had Ben Stiller, Adam Driver, someone else that I'm forgetting the name of. And I didn't like it. I thought it wandered and meandered, and it was kind of just like this slice of life indie movie where nothing really happens. You don't really like any of the characters, and you don't care about the outcome. So I'll be honest, not excited for Marriage Story.
Yeah, I don't know if you look at what other movies Noah Baumbach's done, because I feel like I have seen some of them, but yes, did he do that Squid and the Whale? I saw that on a plane once and thought it was okay, so.
Slight defense, I think he's done some work with Wes Anderson in terms of, I think he co-wrote something good.
Oh, yes, I think he got Oscar nominations for...
Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou, which I enjoyed, and Fantastic Mr. Fox, he co-wrote with Wes Anderson. So that would be one argument in favor of watching it.
Loved Fantastic Mr. Fox. Yeah. One of the best non-Pixar animated films of all time.
Agreed.
So yeah, he's been nominated for 3 Oscars for writing The Squid and the Whale. And for Marriage Story. So anyway, Marriage Story is pretty much a film that is a, like, 2-hour, like, divorce. You're watching a divorce play out, or separation divorce thing play out over like a two hour 20 minutes, however long the movie is. And that's pretty much it. It starts out, I think both people sort of want it to be amicable. But obviously then lawyers get involved. There's different ideas about custody, and then it gets ugly. And you think these two people who were in love at one point in time, we see it all just crumbling down. I think they're really good performances. I think, you know, Adam Driver's great. Scarlett Johansson's great. Laura Dern as the lawyer is really good. And Alan Alda plays a lawyer in the film too, who I think is wonderful. He's sort of this bumbling sort of old, like, low-budget lawyer guy who you think's – he sort of gives the impression he's not sort of on top of things, but he sort of – he's probably the wisest person in the movie. Like, and you pretty much know whenever he says something, you're like, I trust what he says. You trust
– he's the voice of reason.
What, sorry? Yeah, he's the voice of reason in the movie and wonderful, and the scenes with him I really liked. So, you know, in some ways he was my standout in the film, Alan Alda. I'm a big Alan Alda fan, so that's probably no surprise. Love Alan Alda. But, yeah, like, you have this thing, and, like, it's good in a lot of ways. I think I heard someone say they didn't like it because they feel like the woman was depicted particularly annoying. I think it is based on Noah Baumbach's divorce, or like maybe not based on his divorce, but he's been divorced, so based on the love experience. I found Adam Driver just as annoying, though, to be honest, watching the movie. Like, I found them both like frustrating at different times. I think she's the one who first gets lawyers involved, so maybe that's what it wasn't meant to be, involved lawyers, and she's the one who does that. Yeah, look, it's sort of good performance and stuff, but it's sort of like, do I want to watch a two-hour divorce?
It does sound like the film should have been named Divorce Story.
Yeah, it's really Divorce Story. I think it's sort of ironic, maybe an ironic title, like sort of clever. Yeah, it's sort of it, like, there's obviously there's a scene sort of in the second half of the movie where they have a big shouting thing at each other, and you're sort of like, you know, like, you say, okay, this is the scene, like, you know, this is the big sort of, you know, you know, you're watching a movie about a couple getting divorced, and you're like, there's going to be, you see the tension bubbling away, they're going to go off at each other in one scene, it's going to be the big sort of, I didn't think that was written particularly well. I think some of the quieter scenes were written much better than the big shouting one. Like, when I saw the big shouting one, I probably could have written this.
So those, your Oscar scenes, Matt. You gotta shout to get your Oscar.
Yeah, I guess so. it was fine, but I didn't love watching it, and I think it was sort of, you know, not that – I don't think I learnt much through it other than – like, I didn't learn anything because I'm like, yeah, divorce is hard and not great.
Man, divorce is way less fun than I thought it would be.
Yeah, it wasn't a particularly fun film. So, yeah, I give it 6.5 out of 10.
Liked it more than The Irishman.
I think – yeah, mate, yeah, I guess so. Yeah. Alan Alda gets it over the line.
Yeah, look, I'll be honest.
I wouldn't recommend it unless you're trying to see all the Oscar movies.
That's the thing. I have no interest in watching this whatsoever, other than I do, if possible, like to watch all the Oscar-nominated films. I'm just so sick of these indie slice-of-life movies where nothing really happens, and the point of it is just to be real and authentic and just representing human lives. And I'm like, we're all humans living human lives. We don't need to see human lives. We get it, you know? Not that I want everything to be devoid from any human emotion or detached from the human condition, but I want aspects of the human condition to be highlighted in new and entertaining settings. I feel like I often learn so much more from sci-fi space movies than I do these indie movies, because these indie movies is just relatable but boring scenes, whereas the sci-fi movies, people are pushed to the extreme and how they react might not be new to me, but it might be relatable to me in just a more fun and entertaining setting. So stop it. Stop making these films, and when people make them, don't award them with Oscar nominations. I've had it.
So you would rather see a divorce in space or some interesting planet?
Yes.
That's where you want to see your divorces, on a spaceship?
Yes.
In a submarine while a shark's attacking or something?
Two aliens get divorced in space, and instead of hiring lawyers, they get their separate intergalactic armies to go to war, and that's how the divorce is settled.
Yeah, and the robots can talk a bit like lawyers. Yeah. I can see some parallels here. Yeah, because I've had friends get divorced. I've never thought, you know what, this would make a great movie. Like, I want to sit down and watch this over the course of 2 hours.
Imagine how highly you must think of yourself, even if it's your own divorce, to get divorced and thought, oh, I should write a film about this. Like, I know you want like an outlet for your pain, and now that you're divorced, you probably have more free time, but this is not the way to go with it.
Yeah. He's now with Greta Gerwig, though.
I haven't watched Little Women yet, but that Lady Bird, Lady Bird gets a slight pass because it was quite funny. The dialogue was good. There was enough there to keep me going, but I do not hold much confidence that Greta Gerwig's pushing him away from this making films with no point to them.
Yeah, I loved Lady Bird. Like, I loved it. I thought it was one of the best movies of that year. So I'm of the opinion, a bit different to you, I think you can do the indie movie right. I think you can get that right. That slice of life, authentic, like, not in a intergalactic, you know, they don't all have to be spaceships and jetpacks for me.
Just to clarify, that's exactly what I was saying. Every film needs to be in space. Continue.
I thought you'd enjoy me framing it like that. So I do like Lost in Translation, perhaps my favourite film of all time. That's another small little indie film about sort of finding the extraordinary in the ordinary. But so I think you can get it right. I do not think Marriage Story did that.
Yes. Look, I'll give it to you. If you find the extraordinary in the ordinary, you have something to say. If you're showing us the ordinary in the ordinary, get off my TV.
Yeah. So I think slightly better than The Irishman. And I think it's higher than The Irishman in my mind, partly because it's a bit more focused.
Bunny's coming home, although she's on a call. So.
Okay. Two Popes. Tell me about it. Should I see it? Should I not? All I know about this movie is Jonathan Pryce plays the current Pope. Anthony Hopkins plays the last pope. It was sort of interesting how we have two popes that are alive, because usually popes change when someone dies. This film deals with their relationship.
Yes. So this is based on history, so I feel like I can perhaps give a few more spoilers in this than the other films. If you saw the trailer and thought, wow, this film just looks like a lot of two old guys talking to each other, you'd be right. It's basically 2 hours of conversations between Anthony Hopkins and Jonathan Pryce. There are some flashbacks following Jonathan Pryce's character when he was younger, which does break it up a little bit. But that's basically the bulk of the film. What the film is we have a pope who is a more conservative, traditional pope, and then we have a bishop or archbishop who's considered a bit of a revolutionary. It has a bit more of a progressive approach to the Catholic Church. And there's basically just a lot of religious discussions, theological discussions, and the dialogue is somewhat interesting, and the acting's very good, but there's really, like, nothing going on the first half of the movie. You get some nice shots of Italy and the Vatican. It's visually, it's quite interesting, despite there really being no action. They do manage to hold your attention visually, which I thought was quite impressive. And then the second half of the film gets a bit more interesting when you learn that the current pope is considering resigning, which is something that popes don't do. Popes usually are pope until they die, and then this pope wants to resign. And which the bishop wants it to resign as well, and the current pope wouldn't accept it. And it culminates with them, I guess, kind of like coming together. The pope resigns. He lets the new pope, the Jonathan Pryce becomes the new pope. They kind of resolve some of their issues, and it's an interesting journey, but I'm not sure what you're getting other than stuff that you could just read on Wikipedia. I guess if you're really interested in the politics and the theology of it, you can get more invested than I did. There is a bit about the abuse within the done by certain people within the church. And they acknowledged it, but I felt like they kind of brushed over it. And, you know, I have no idea what the original pope knew or didn't know, but there's a scene where he says, you know, perhaps I knew a bit more and didn't do as much as I should have, and, you know, he confesses, and then it's okay, and they move on. And I was like, well, if that's something that you're concerned about, you're affected by that, or that's an issue for you relating to the Catholic Church, I don't know if that was enough. I feel like they kind of like, let's sweep past this. Let's get past this part of the film as soon as possible.
Yeah, it's a tough box the filmmaker's in a bit, because I guess you need to make a choice. Is this what we want the film to be all about? And if the answer's no, it's sort of hard to know how to address it, because it's definitely something that's there. But does every film about the Catholic Church and popes and stuff have to be about child stuff? Because then there's other issues and themes that you can't delve into. It's a tough. I don't know how well they've dealt with the 19th. They probably didn't deal with it very well. But it's tricky for a filmmaker, isn't it? If you're trying to write a film, you really just want to be about these guys' relationship to know how to address that.
Yeah, and it's tricky for the audience as well, because did I want more of that? No, not really. I don't think that would have made the film better. But can you just not deal with it at all? That doesn't seem really like a realistic option either. So you're right. They were kind of painted into a corner. The strength of the film is the ideological battle. It's kind of like a, you know, Game of Thrones characters arguing over military strategy, or, you know, in Succession, whether, you know, what's the best way to do a hostile takeover of this business, you know. Anthony Hopkins putting forward the case for a conservative approach to Catholicism, Jonathan Pryce putting the case forward for a more revolutionary approach to Catholicism. And there's kind of a bit of a reveal about his backstory, maybe about three quarters of the way through the film, which is a little bit interesting. At first I thought, I don't know, I've spent so much time getting invested in these characters in this timeline, to switch to this other timeline, I don't know, I'm not invested in a young version of this guy. But it does pay off, I think, in the end, and you kind of learn a bit more about why they are the way they are. So ultimately, what should have been a very boring film about some very tough topics ended up being surprisingly watchable. I think for you personally, you might enjoy it. I think you might enjoy some of the discussions on certain Bible passages. I think that might appeal to you. And just overall, yeah, a solid film. I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10.
Oh, so the sort of the best score any of us have given any movies in this podcast, maybe The Two Popes is the Netflix film of the year and is the one that is not nominated for Best Picture at the Oscars.
Yes, nominated in a couple of categories, but not Best Picture, which I didn't realize at the time. I'm not sure why, but I thought it was. I thought I was checking one off my list 2 hours later in the exact same place that I was before.
Should have watched Marriage Story.
Well, we'll see. So there you go. Those are our recommendations. Let us know if you're planning on watching them or if you've already seen one of these three Netflix films. Weigh in on the Netflix Battle Royale at facebook.com/screenverdictpodcast.
Maybe I'll put up a poll on the Facebook page saying which Netflix movie is the best, Marriage Story, The Irishman, or The Two Popes.
Yes, I like it. Vote.
Yes.
So that's the podcast. Do we have any housekeeping, anything to bring up or to look forward to?
Don't think so. I have just binged Succession season one. I'm hoping to get through season two in the next couple of weeks, so that would be a good thing to talk about. There's a lot of juicy stuff there. You've even referenced it this podcast.
Yeah. There's been a few shows that I've binged recently as well. You, Sex Education, I finished Succession, Killing Eve, and then a whole bunch of movies that either got snubbed by the Oscars or made it to the Oscars. So we'll either cover those in individual podcasts, and we'll also be doing a Oscars podcast. We'll also
do The Crown? Are you watching The Crown?
No, I'm not, but I've watched the first four episodes of season one, so pretty far behind.
Okay, yeah. Better Call Saul starts next month too. You got to catch up on Better Call Saul.
I've watched one episode of season one.
Yeah, so you got a bit to go because season five launches in February.
Yeah, we'll see. I did binge like four seasons of Breaking Bad to catch up in time for season five. I doubt I'll replicate that, but we'll see.
Yeah.
And then lastly, ESPYs, probably in about a month from now when we've had time to catch up on everything that came out in 2019, we'll not only do our ESPY Awards for the best of 2019, we're going to do the ESPY Awards for the best of the decade, 2010 through 2019.
Well, like, the decade doesn't start until 2021, I think.
All right. All right, we're putting up a second poll.
No. I think we should still do the awards, but it's not like best of the decade. It's best of like the tens or whatever, like, you know, like because the 20s have begun.
See, weigh in, vote. Facebook.com/screenverdictpodcast.
We'll do an awards. We'll do an awards for the past 10 years of film.
I get it. You count numbers 1 through 10, 11 through 20. Those are your blocks. I get it. But when it comes to decades, we do things by the first number. We do it through with the 60s, right? That's 60 through 69, all right? Yep. 1970 is not part of the 1960s, okay? So right. We're doing the 10s. We're doing 2010 through 2019. That's the decade.
Yeah. What year did our podcast start?
2011. So we've been going, almost the whole decade.
So, that's annoying. We didn't start the year earlier because then it could also be like the awards for the 10 years of Screen Verdict sort of thing too.
Yeah. Well, what were we doing in 2010?
We were talking about movies and stuff. We just didn't record it.
Yeah, that was the research and development phase of the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. We may have been working on the pilot.
Yeah, it was the prototype, the proof of concept phase for the podcast.
We were just waiting for Cars 2.
We thought, look, we know what we want to do and we're ready to do it now, but we need to start with a banger.
Yeah. Cars 2.
Cars 2. All right. Well, that's the podcast. We hope you enjoyed. Let us know if any of those particularly appeal to you for future podcasts and we'll bump it to the top of the list. And
love it.
Until then, hope you enjoyed and we'll see you next week.
See ya, bye.